Indeed, I do rejoice in the fact that I've been privileged to live with my wife for 60 years. But I'm not the oldest married person in this audience. We have Boyd and Linda Hurst here. They've been married longer than we have. 60 what? 60? 3? Just 60. Ah, same year, wasn't it? 60 years.
Too much longer.
Too much longer, okay. And then we've got a number of people that's been married over 50 years. Bill was telling me they've been married 56. And yesterday at the gathering, there were a number of people that were there, a couple who had been married over 50 years. And so I'm just one of few. Some of you know Jesse and Marie Jenkins. They've been married 75 years. So while I rejoice in the years that we've had together, I'm certainly not the only one that's experienced that. Now, people ask the question, how can anyone stay married so long? And of course, we had all the answers when we were young, first married. All you had to do was ask us. No, we didn't know. But over the years, we've come to learn some principles that's helped us to not only endure, but to enjoy all the years of our marriage. Now, we're going to talk about this prescription. It's a divine prescription. But I'm very confident that the other people who've enjoyed long and joyful marriages, like the Hurst, Wally and Linda, are 59, they'll be 60 next year if the Lord lets them live, will tell you they've practiced the same prescription. And so it's not a matter of who you ask. It's a matter of whether or not the prescription works. And I trust you'll see some of the things that God has set forth for us, the creator of marriage, that will help us not only have a lasting marriage, but an enjoying relationship. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, where marriage is introduced by the God of heaven, the creator of man and woman. He said, "For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife." This is a fundamental concept in a lasting marriage. The word cleave, your version may say be joined to. The idea of a super glue that holds things together and cannot be separated. But you know, you can go look up the original word, you can do that kind of study, or you can find a good commentary that tells you exactly what that meant. And I happen to know of one. Turn over to Matthew chapter 19. Matthew chapter 19. And verse 3 through 6. Because in this particular setting, people were asking the question, can I end this marriage? They said, is it lawful to divorce my wife for any reason at all? Verse 3. I don't know what reason it was. I don't know why they were unhappy or unsatisfied. But can we terminate this relationship? He answered and said. And his answer is one that will help any married couple. Whether they've been married 2 days or 20 years or 80 years, it doesn't make any difference. Have you not read? And that's what we're going to do as we endeavor to see how people can stay married so long. Read what the creator of marriage said. That's what Jesus said for these people to do. Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female and said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cleave unto his wife, or this version says be joined to his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Now, here's the interpretation. So, they are no longer two but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let no man separate, or your version may say, put asunder. In other words, the prescription says, you've got to make it work. There's no out. You entered this relationship. When you entered this relationship, you've made a covenant, a lasting covenant. Malachi chapter 2 and verse 14, the prophet was talking to the priest who were putting away their wives. And he said, she's your wife by covenant. So some of you young people have not gotten married. Someday you're going to have a quote-unquote marriage ceremony. So many times it's just pomp and circumstance. And really doesn't mean a whole lot to people. But just remember this. When you stand before somebody and they say, do you take this woman or this man to be your lawfully wedded wife or husband? Until death do you part. And you say, I do. You've entered a covenant. It's a lifelong covenant. It doesn't make any difference if you fall out of love. It doesn't make any difference if they get ugly. It doesn't make any difference if they get heavy. Doesn't make any difference. You said before God, and God hears your I do or I will or whatever you say, it's forever, as long as you both shall live. That's in the prescription when God made marriage, that there's no way out. Now, somebody raises the question, but wait a minute. Marriage involves two people. What about the other party? It may be that I want to keep my covenant. I don't want to sever my marriage. But obviously, this kind of a covenant involves two people, and they've both got to be agreeable to keep that covenant in place and that relationship in place. Well, in fact, God said something about that as well through His Apostle Paul. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, beginning in verse 12, He said, after telling them not to divorce, He said, if any brother has a wife who has an unbeliever and she consents to live with him, he must not divorce her. A woman who has an unbelieving husband and he consents to live with her, she must not send her husband away. Stop with me just a moment. Imagine in Corinth. Corinth, you live in Corinth. It might make Houston, Texas look like a grand place. As bad as it is here. Corinth was full of immorality and ungodliness and fornication and sin and idolatry. Their religion, there was in the old city, the way that you went and practiced their religion was through fornication with the priestesses who were prostitutes. Remember, these people came out of that society to be these Christians in this church. That is, some of them did. Imagine if you're a woman, you hear Paul preach the gospel of Christ, and you say, I believe in Jesus, and I want my sins washed away, which we sang about in these songs. I want the Lord to be my shepherd. So you become a Christian. But he doesn't. He keeps on drinking, lying, cursing, living ungodly, unkind, inconsiderate. Now what? I'll just divorce. Malachi, that prophet we read a while ago, he said God hates divorce. And now one of his prophets in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul, said, don't divorce this unbelieving mate. Where did that begin? That began in Genesis 2. That you cleave, that you're joined, that you're stuck to for life to your mate. That may not seem fair, but the God of all wisdom and love, knowing the need of mankind to have a stable environment, said that marriage is a lifetime covenant. And you're not permitted to divorce them, even if they are not the kind of mate that you want. He went on to say, if the unbelieving one leaves, let him leave. The brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases. Doesn't mean they can go get another mate, but they're not under bondage to live with them. If they take off, you don't have to go get some ropes and a strong man and drag them back home. But marriage is designed to be for life. So, young people get married. Oh, they're happy. It's not going to be long, we have an argument. My daughter called. I don't remember if it was a few months after they got married. My wife answered the phone. She was crying. What's wrong? We're going to get a divorce. What happened? We had an argument. So? Well, y'all never had arguments. Oh, yes, we did. We just didn't do it in front of you. People are going to have arguments. I had a person tell me one time, we've never had an argument. Next year, they were divorced. People are going to have arguments. They're going to have differences. There could be things they don't like, but you entered a covenant for better or for worse till death do you part. That's part of the prescription. So, you know, we've got young people here that are going to get a job and they're going to want to buy a car. You say, boy, all I got is this money to get this car. It's not really what I want, but I'll get another one later. What if the first car you bought, you had to keep all your life? You might say, you know, I think I'll save up my money a little bit and look around a little more. Yeah, that's marriage. It's a lifetime commitment. And these couples that I've mentioned made that commitment when they got married. And that's how they can stay married so long. Now, if your mate does choose to leave, here's what you want to be sure of. That it's not your fault. Because you were not kind and you weren't considered and you didn't fulfill the duties of marriage, which we'll be talking about. That's what you want to be sure about. But you can do all of that, or you'll make mistakes. But I'm talking about on a consistent basis, failing to keep your part of the marriage agreement. And that's why they left. That's what you want to be sure about. Now, if what I'm saying is true, if I'm reading this prescription correctly, what does that say for parents? teach your children now that marriage to last must be looked upon as a lifelong commitment. And I have confidence that so many of these good parents that we have in this audience talk to their children about that. And young people, I encourage you to listen. Here you're in Genesis chapter 2. There's another part of that prescription right here in this text. It's in verse 18. Here in Genesis 2, you had the man. In chapter 1, you had the man and the woman created. But then Moses takes his zoom camera, and he zooms in on just a specific part of the creation, so he actually backs up. And now all you have is the man, no woman in the picture. And you have this verse 18, the Lord God said, "It is not good for the man to be alone." Now the opposite of being alone is having company, someone to share your life with. So if I understand what I'm reading, the purpose of marriage, as stated in Genesis 2, is to provide somebody to share life with, companionship, to be a companion. And we might think of the physical relationship, to share bodies, and that's involved, but it's so much more. It's sharing life together, your dreams, your hopes, and even your failures. Sharing time together. People get married and they don't spend time together. And that's easy to happen. There are things that will come in and rob you of companionship. For example, jobs will do it. Children will do it. People get married and they have children. All their time is on their children. All their thoughts are on their children. All they talk to about is their children. That's not God's plan, folks. I told my children, I've got a daughter here today and a son. You can ask them. I said, "I love you. I love her more, my wife. You're not going to be around when I'm old to hold my hand and take care of me. She will. And so I want you to leave. I don't want you to stay here. I want you to get married." And so share time with your mate. Make time. You got to work at it. You got to plan for it. Spend time together. Talk together. Do things together. And that's the purpose of the marriage relationship. And so beware of those things that will rob you of that. Now, when God talked about this, he said, you know, Adam, God had made all these animals. Now, Moses, in chapter 2, writes out of order for sake of a point that he's making. The animals had already been made, chapter 1. But Moses writes out of order for sake of thought. You find that often in the book of Genesis. And so it says in verse 19, God brought all these animals to Adam and he named them. You know, people today say, well, a dog is man's best friend. Well, I know what it is to love a dog. I had one, I fought for the dog. But he's not my best friend. You know who your best friend ought to be? So God said, I'm going to make a helper suitable. Suitable for what? He's alone. I'm going to make a helper suitable for loneliness. And what did he make? He put the man to sleep, took one of his ribs, he made a woman. That was God's plan to solve this problem that man had. This woman was the answer to needing somebody to talk to share my dreams with, my disappointments with, my concepts with, to do things together and enjoy life together. I don't know how to emphasize strong enough the importance of companionship. You know, when God made this woman, he didn't make an it. We're in a society that's upside down. Brother Michael Riddle, who held our meeting, he said, Canada's way ahead of us in stupidity. That's my words. He was teaching in a college. And he said, if he used the wrong pronoun, he not only could have got fired, he could have got fined and maybe jailed. Stupidity. He made a female. It's called a woman. That's what she is. She's not an it. Therefore, being a woman should not try to be another man. God didn't make her to be a man. He could have made another man. He made a woman. Furthermore, she made him to be his companion, not his mother. Not to tell him what he ought to do and ought not do all the time. Over in the book of Proverbs, chapter 24, the writer of these Proverbs talked about this very concept, and it may explain some things. There in Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 19, I believe I got the wrong verse there. Let's go to chapter 27 and verse 15. All right. Go to chapter. Hopefully I got that one right. 27 and 15. Here, a constant dripping on a rainy day, dripping on a day of steady rain, and a contentious woman are alike. And you talk about aggravating. A woman who, you know, mothers mean well, and sometimes they've got calls for saying, pick up your clothes, clean up after yourself at the table. What's your language when you talk to your mom and dad? Who are you going out with tonight? They got a lot of questions because they love you. But wife is not mama. She's a companion. And wives and their concern for their husband can take that role. That's not their role. To be a mother and govern everything that a man says. And that may be the reason sometimes men will leave that relationship. And so remember what we read in Genesis 2. Man was alone. He wanted somebody to talk with, not just to talk to him, but to talk with and share life together. She was not made to be a helper to clean the cook. I don't know if Adam had a house. I'm sure he didn't have a washing machine. I don't know what kind of dishes they used, if they had any. And yet God said, I'm going to make a helper suitable to the need. Women ought to keep the house. That's what Titus chapter 2 says. Keep the home, which would entail those kind of things. But that wasn't why she was made. And if men get married, because I need somebody to, after all, I've got to have somebody to wash the clothes and prepare the meals and take care of the house while I'm working. I feel sorry for you and for your marriage. That's not the purpose of marriage. And so, gearing your life to that. Now, you know a prescription. If you go, you're sick, and you go and the doctor gives you a prescription and you get it filled, how is that a prescription going to do any good if it's the right prescription? Well, you're going to have to read it. And if it says take these pills 3 times a day, that doesn't mean I'll take them when I like it. I'll skip a couple of days and take it, or I'll take 3 at 1 time. Get it all over with. You can't do that. You know that. The same is true with God's prescription. If companionship is the purpose of marriage, what it requires is both for the man and for the woman to be aware of that. And that's why we're talking about it. But then to work to accomplish that. So he didn't make an it. He made a woman. He didn't make another man. Men who understand that will treat their wives like a woman, not like another man. You go to work, men, you talk to other guys. You may talk gruff. You may be sharp. It don't work with the woman. She's a woman, not a man. Don't try to make her into a man. Treat her like a woman. And furthermore, she's designed to be a companion, not your servant. Yes, she loves you. She will serve you. But God didn't make her to be your servant. I got things I got to do. I don't have time to do it. Here, you do them. That's okay if she wants to help you. And y'all can work together on that. But that's not the purpose God made her. You know, I don't have time to balance my checks. So here, hon, you do that. I don't have time to take care of the yard. Would you mow the grass for me? Whatever it may be. It's to be a companion, to share life together. And so in his speech and in his conduct, that ought to be reflected. Well, the same is true with a woman. If God made her to be not a man, but a woman, she ought to talk like a woman and act like a woman and dress like a woman. We've got some people who are awfully perverted in our society. And they want to be married to another man. There's a word for those kind of people. There's a word in our language, but I'll not use that one. I'll just use what the Bible calls homosexuals. God didn't make men to live with men as companions. He made a woman. Be a woman. Glory in being a woman. That's what God made you to be. And a man can never fulfill the high role that he gave you. So work and sacrifice. Think about it. How can I be a companion with this man that he likes to be with? How am I going to talk to him? How am I going to act around him? What can I do that he'll be saying, man, I can't wait to get home from work and be with my wife? Be that kind of woman. And that'll help your marriage last. I don't make a very good meeting preacher. The few meetings I held when I was away from home, I called my wife every night. I was glad when it was over. If it was an 8-hour distance, I was driving home. I wanted to be home. Why? Because I'm smart? No, because she's smart. She made me want to be with her. And I'm sure that these other people that have been married can tell you the same kind of story. But it's not based on us. I'm trying to base this on the divine prescription that I read here in Genesis chapter 2. Look at Proverbs chapter 24. Proverbs chapter 24. Look at verse 30. I passed by the field of the sluggard and by the vineyard of the man lacking sense. Behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles. Its stone wall was broken down. Talk with me just a moment. So here's this guy, he's got a garden or a vineyard. Did he go and sow thistles in it and thorns? No. What did he do? He just neglected it. He didn't take care of it. He didn't weed it. He didn't water it. He didn't cultivate it. And what happened to his garden is the same thing as if an enemy had come in and wanted to destroy it. But it wasn't some enemy. It's just laziness, lack of thoughtfulness and attention and dedication to that garden to make it what it wanted to be. Listen to what the writer says. I saw reflected upon it. I looked and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. In other words, I'll do it later. Let me sleep a little longer. I'll take care of my garden some other day. And he said, then your poverty will come as a robber and your want as an armed man. Okay, so when are you going to start? Well, I'm going to work on that in a couple of weeks. No, that's what this guy said. I'll get to it. Get to it now. Marriage is a wonderful relationship. You got to work on it. You got to cultivate it. You got to weed it for it to work. So, we've been talking about the responsibilities of men and women and likening it unto a garden. It's a beautiful illustration to me. It's what's necessary to have this relationship of companionship in the marriage. But there's more to this prescription. Turn with me to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. Look at verse 25. Now it says, husbands, love your wives. But that's not all that it says. See, I got that one down. You know, a young person gets married, man, I love her so much, I just want to go put my arms around her and kiss her. That's not this. And that's the reason on the slide I've got the other two words underlined. Husband, love your wife just as. This is a kind of love. What kind is it? He describes it as Christ loved the church. And the church was not lovable. It wasn't beautiful. It was ugly. It was sinful. Before they became his people. He loved the church and he gave himself up for her. This is a love that says, I won't think just about me. I'm going to think about you. And I'm going to do what's good for you. I care about you and I'll sacrifice for your welfare. And that's why I choose to call it caring love. It's not an emotional love. Note that he says in verse 26, he gave himself up to sanctify her, set her apart. He wants her to be honored. He wants her to be proud of her. Set her apart, having cleansed her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present himself to the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing. You know, men talk about loving their wife. Now go turn on the TV and put some old dirty movie on. Try to get her to watch it with you. Talk in dirty language and try to get her to join in. Want to go out some place to dance and drink, try to get her. You don't love your wife. I do love her. No, we're not about emotion. No, we're not talking about physical interaction. We're talking about you don't care about her. But I like to do those things. You sacrifice to keep her pure and honorable for her good, for her moral and spiritual welfare. That's what you do. It's the love that he says in verse 28, you show for your own body. You love yourself. You don't hate yourself, you nourish and cherish yourself. It's not that you get excited feelings when you look in the mirror, I hope. But you say, I need a coat, or I need some food, or I need something. Your wife, you look for her, not just her physical needs. I give her a home, I pay the bill. No, she may need, I love you, a touch, an encouragement, an acknowledgement. She fixed her hair for you today. You say, you sure look nice. She wore a dress that she knows you like. You say, you sure look pretty. You come home and you just talk about your day. How was your day? You care about her. And you sacrifice. I sure like to watch that TV show. But I need to spend some time with my beloved. This is what companionship is about. This is what caring love is about. Caring about the other person. Proverbs chapter 31. Now this chapter says, husbands, love your wife. So what about the woman loving her husband? Okay, let's go to Proverbs 31. If I properly define this kind of love, the word love doesn't occur here. But you have as good a description of this kind of love as you'll find anywhere in your Bible, right here in Proverbs 31, when he's talking about the excellent or the worthy wife. So you want a worthy woman, woman that's noble, that'll meet the challenge of being a companion, here it is. He said, verse 11, the heart of her husband trusts in her, and he'll have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil. There's the two-sided nature of this love right there. You know, I was making those applications a while ago. I said, where you get that, preacher? Here it is. This is not good for my wife or my husband. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. So whether it's a man or whether it's a woman, there's the demand of caring love. You know, Linda just told me she had the occasion to talk to three people at a furniture store recently about, they sat down, she got the opportunity to talk to them about marriage. And Linda's good to take advantage of those opportunities. That's Linda Ottersback. And she said, she mentioned to them, you know, they talking about marriage and having a lasting marriage. And she talked about these very things that I have here in my notes. You're not selfish. You have consideration for your mate. You're not thoughtless about them and where they're at and their thinking and their needs. Now, you know, become selfish. Think only of self and what you need, and they're not meeting my needs. That's a good way to shorten a marriage, or at least make it miserable. You want to lengthen your marriage. You want to make it beautiful. Learn to quit thinking about self so that you start thinking about your mate. What can I do for them? You know what will happen? That other love that you want, it'll be a fruit. When they learn they're living with somebody that really cares about me. But that's not my prescription. I'm not smart. Here's what I'm reading in the Creator's prescription for a lasting marriage. But back to Ephesians chapter 5, there's something else mentioned here. In the divine prescription for marriage, here we see in verse 22 through 24, he says, wives, now the word be subject's in italics. Now, it probably is in your Bible if you have one of the Bibles that italicizes words. If you have one that doesn't italicize words, you better get you one that does and always compare it. Now that's the idea, okay, but it's more than being subject. It's more than, okay, he does it, I'll do it, I don't like it, and I'll make him sorry he told me. Not that kind of thing. Listen, how do I know that? Okay, look at the text. I should have underlined the little phrase, as to, because it defines it. He said, be subject to your husbands as to the Lord. That is, you respect him. You respect his authority. You respect the fact that he has the right to see about your welfare and make decisions that's good for you. And so, you respect that role that God set up in this relationship. Down a little bit further, as you continue to read down in verse 33, he said, the wife must see to it that she respects her husband. So a woman may be obedient and not respect her husband, doesn't treat him with respect, gives him a hard time all the time about everything he tries to do. Let me tell you something, ladies. Someday you're going to stand before the God who made marriage. I don't know what he'll tell you. But just staying in the marriage and bickering and fighting every decision, you'll have to answer to him about that. You want a lasting marriage? Sure, a wife has a right to say, I don't agree with that. And men ought to be willing to discuss that. Sarah did that with Abraham. But in the end, God delegated that man that role. And it's not an easy role. Sometimes you know your decisions are not going to be popular. But you've got to do it for the welfare of the family. So respect. You say, wait a minute. That seems kind of one-sided, preacher. What about the man respecting the wife? Oh, we're getting to that. Let's go to 1 Peter 3. You know, if you get a prescription, it may have more than one instruction on it. It may say, take 3 times a day. Then it may say, always take after a meal. And what, suppose you read the prescription, you just read half of it. And so, before you eat, an hour before you eat, oh, I'm going to grab those pills and take them. You'll take those pills, and all of a sudden, after a little bit, your stomach feels mad, and you feel upset. What's wrong with this doctor that gave me this kind of prescription? Wait, did you read all of the prescription? The New Testament, the whole Bible, is our prescription for marriage. And there's something over here in 1 Peter chapter 3 in verse 7. Now he's talking to the men. And look what he says in verse 7. You husbands in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life. Now, someone weaker doesn't mean she's weaker mentally. May not mean she's weaker physically. He's using the imagery of a vessel that can be broken. Treat her as a, not an iron pot, but a crystal vase that you treat differently and tenderly and carefully. That's if I understand the verse. But then he said, you treat her as a fellow heir of the grace of life. You know, we learn from other people when we study the Bible. Wally's the one who helped me understand this verse years and years ago. A fellow heir of the grace of life. I was thinking spiritual life. Wally said, why is it spiritual life? What if she's not a Christian? Isn't this human life? And I think he's right. She's made in the image of God just like you are. Yes, God delegated you men the authority. But in the eyes of God, she's just as important, just as worthy. You better treat her right. You're going to give an answer how you treat God's gift. And so, respect her. You know, sometimes women have better sense about things than men do. Because she's a woman and she's to respect your rule doesn't mean you act like you know everything. You don't know everything. And one of the things you don't know is how to treat a woman. That's what you're thinking. Respect that woman. And so that's one of the parts of this prescription. Well, here's another. Let's go to the Song of Solomon. We don't study the Song of Solomon very much, do we? But it's part of God's book. And it's part of the prescription. It's God put this song in there to read. And I want you to notice in chapter 2 with something that's said here. I want to start in verse 3. You reading with me? It's a picture this Shulamite maiden, this young woman, is painting about this shepherd boy she's in love with. Like an apple tree among the trees of the forest, so is my beloved among the young men. In his shade I took great delight and sat down. I want you to note that word delight. The picture is of a tree, an apple tree. But when she's close enough and in the company of that tree, boy, it is nice. She is a happy girl. Now, where she likes to be with this fella, there's something about this young man, and the way he treats her and talks to her. We'll read more about that in just a minute. That she looks for every moment she can be with him. That's another kind of love. I use the term affectionate love. Other people may use other terminology. We may call it emotional love. It's the feel-good love. It's the fall-in-love love. That kind of love. And that's what you have, if I understand, the Song of Solomon being talked about here. Look at some of these verses with me. Let's continue. Let's go back up to verse 3. We started there. Now verse 4. He brought me to his banquet hall. Try to picture this. He brought me to his banquet hall. So, come on, sweetheart. We're going to go to this place where we can be together and enjoy things. Oh, there's a sign up here. What kind of hall is this? You know what the sign is? L-O-V-E. The banner over it was love. That's what this young man's thinking about. Sustain me with raisin cakes, refresh me with apples, for I am lovesick. You ever see people just lovesick? You know, they fall in love. They can't even hardly think straight. That's this. I'm going to tell you something, folks. You don't have to stop after you get married, you know, first few months or years. There's people think. You know, Keith and Melissa have a little phrase in their marriage. You know, they do crazy things. And they say, yeah, he's my brand of crazy, or she's my brand of crazy. Well, me and my wife do things that people think we're crazy. Because we're lovesick. This girl was lovesick. And you can have that in a marriage. And so that's what she's talking about. Now let's look over to chapter 3, verse 7, what this entails. Let me go back to chapter 2, verse 7. Chapter 2, verse 7. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or the hinds of the field, that you do not arouse or awaken my love until she pleases. If I understand that refrain, which occurs throughout the book, it's not a love you can force. Sometimes you may see your companion say, why don't you fall in love with that person? I just don't love them, that's all. I'll care about them. I'll seek their wealth, but I just don't love them. That's what this girl said. The King Solomon says, man, you're beautiful. I'd like to take you into my harem. She don't love Solomon. And she's telling these women, you can't force this kind of love. So let's start here in verse. Look at verse 8. Forget that chapter 3. We're in chapter 2. Look at chapter 2, verse 8. Listen, my beloved, he's coming, climbing on the mountain, leaping on the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or young stag. Behold, he's standing on our wall. He's looking through the windows. He's peering through the lattice. My beloved responded and said to me, listen to this. You ever talk to your... Okay, you may not use this exact terminology, guys. But maybe something in the neighborhood. She's thinking about him, how he talks to her. Listen to it. Why does she say she delights in his shade? Here it is. He says, "Arise, my darling, my beautiful one." How do you talk about your wife after 5, 10, 15 years of marriage? "Oh, that's my broad." "Really?" "Yeah, that's my old lady." "Really? How about your sunshine? How about my sweetheart?" He says, "You beautiful one." You ever tell your wife she's beautiful? "Come along. The winter's past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers have appeared in the land, the time has arrived for pruning the vines, the voice of the turtle dove has been heard in our land, the fig tree has ripened its figs, the vines in blossom have given forth their fragrance. Arise, my darling, my beautiful one, and come along." "Come on. Let's go look at the flowers." "How much money are you going to make?" "None." "What are we going to accomplish?" "Just being together, talking, sharing God's creation." And she thinks about it and says, "Boy, I like that guy. I'd like to be with that fella. Oh, my dove, in the clefts of the rocks, in the secret place of the steep pathway, let me see your form. Let me hear your voice." You ever tell your wife something like that? Okay, you don't use that terminology, maybe. Do you ever tell her she looks nice when she fixes her hair and wears the clothes you like and buy some new shoes to go along with her? You ever say, "My, you look nice. She likes this guy. Let me see your form. Let me hear your voice. Your voice is sweet and your form is lovely." This is another kind of love that can make a marriage last and be beautiful. It's a love that you delight in your mate and you strive to be the kind of person that your mate will be delighted in. That's this kind of love. Look at chapter 5. In chapter 5 and verse 10, "My beloved is dazzling and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. His head is like gold, pure gold. His locks are like clusters of dates and black as a raven. His eyes are like doves beside streams of water, bathed in milk and reposed in their setting." I know there's no guys here who look like that. But the point is, she thinks he's a handsome guy. I don't think he probably came in stinking. There was a young couple. I went to a congregation, it was a work not far from here, had a young couple, and they were having trouble in their marriage. And he couldn't understand why. He said, "I buy her. You know, I give her money, got her a credit card." He'd go out and work on the car, get dirty and sweaty. He wanted to come in and be romantic. Yeah, boy, that worked. No, she likes to look at this guy and the way he appeals to her. His cheeks are like a bed of balsam, banks of sweet scented herb. His lips are lilies, dripping with liquid myrrh. His hands are like rods of gold set with beryl. And, of course, she's talking a lot about his physical appearance. And, you know, men, you don't want your wife to get sloppy, do you? Do you get sloppy? Do you take care of your appearance? I know you can't be the guy you were when you were 25. But you can clean up and you can take care of yourself and you can watch your diet and you can do a little exercise. You can do something. But here's really the key. Look down at verse 16. "His mouth is full of sweetness. He's wholly desirable." Listen to this, folks. This is this kind of love. It's what it's based on right here. "This is my beloved, and this is my friend." Who's your best friend? You ask a lot of married people, "Who's your best friend?" If you ask a woman, say, "Oh, it's this girl I've known for years and years. We used to go to school together. We spent a lot of time on the phone and Facebook." You ask a man, maybe some guy he goes hunting with. In this little old session that they had up at Dina Long's here recently, where Dean and Kalen set it up and had a bunch of young college kids there, asked Keith himself to speak, and so Keith was speaking, and there's a young man sitting there. And so he kind of put him on the spot. He said, "You know, you like a girl, you're dating her, and I don't remember, maybe he was married to her, I don't remember. Married to her?" He said, "And this guy likes to hunt." And he said, "Now what would you do if she said," I don't remember what your question was, "do something she likes that normally men wouldn't want to go to some store, maybe look at something, or go hunting?" The guy was dumbfounded. He didn't know what, he knew what he was supposed to say, and finally did. But you do things because that's your friend. Your friend. How can people stay married long and enjoy it? That's what we're talking about. Well, I didn't write the Song of Solomon, folks. It's not my book. It's not my song. But here's the divine prescription. All right, here's another. Proverbs 5. We'll just read it, and you can think about it. But this is very important to a lasting and happy marriage. Verse 15, you got to deal with the imagery. If they have a thirsty man, who needs water to quench his thirst. That's the picture. Look at it. Drink water from your own cistern and fresh water from your own well. Should your springs be dispersed abroad, springs of water in the streets, let them be yours alone and not for strangers with you. So what in the world? Something in the Bible about quenching your thirst. Keep reading. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love. People get married to enjoy that kind of love, and then it becomes a thing they don't give much attention to. Sometimes it's an on-demand type thing. That's not what the Bible teaches. Plan for it. Make time for it. Set the atmosphere for it. It's an important part of a marriage. It may not always be your idea, but it's part of the marriage. If you want a lasting relationship, not to shorten your relationship, you better pay attention. Look at that next verse I didn't read. For why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? And that thirsty guy, if he don't get what he needs to drink at home, he can find it out there. You quench his thirst. Look at 1 Corinthians 7. Many years later, some people in a church in Corinth wrote to a man about marriage. His name was Paul, and he writes to them about marriage. It's interesting how he starts the chapter dealing with what we're dealing with right now. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, as we begin here in verse 1, concerning the things about which you wrote, it's good for a man not to touch a woman. He wasn't talking about shaking hands. He's talking about the intimate relationship. Touching leads to that, and it's put by metonymy for that. But because of immorality, because of the desire that for filling that natural sensual desire that can lead to sin, each man has to have his own wife or own woman, a wife, a married woman. Each woman is to have her own husband. Husband must fulfill his duty to his wife. And on he goes, encouraging these Corinthian men and women. You pay attention to that part of your marriage. Now look at verse 5. Stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again. Look at the last part of that verse. So that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Men and women can get thirsty. And sometimes they're going to exceed the bounds of lawfulness to quench that thirst. You fill them up. And it'll contribute to a long and lasting marriage. One more point here I want you to note. It's a negative one. And that's to avoid. Look at Proverbs chapter 4. Verse 14. Do not enter the path of the wicked and do not proceed in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Do not pass by it. Turn away from it and pass on. So here's a path. It's right there. You can start walking down it. You can think about it. Say, man, that looks pretty interesting. The writer says, don't even think about it. Go some other way. Stay away from that path. The path of evil. The path of wrong. What are we talking about when we talk about marriage? Here are some of the things. Look at the very next chapter, chapter 5, verse 8. Talking about certain women. He says to his sons, those he's teaching. He said, keep your way far from her. And do not go near. Not just didn't say, don't go to her house. Don't even get close. Boy, she lives right over there. Oh, I can find her over there at that bar. Or I can find her over there somewhere out where you ought not be. No, he said, don't go there. Avoid dangerous circumstances with other men or women. Now, that one talked to the young man. But look at chapter 7, verse 7 and 8. He said, I saw among the naive and discerning among the youth a young man lacking sense, passing through the street near her corner. And he takes the way to her house. That woman lived there. He knew it. She's a bad woman. But I guess she's pretty. And she likes to kiss. And she likes to caress. She's even married to somebody else. Boy, there's some tempting things there. And he goes by her house. And she comes out. And she beckons him. And she wins him over to sin. And what does he say? Go talk to her. No, he said, don't even go there. Men and women have those tempting circumstances at work. You're working with a secretary. Or you're working with a boss. May go to lunch with them. Maybe they want you to take a trip with them. Dangerous, folks. It may be a relative. a friend, a neighbor. You want a lasting marriage? Avoid dangerous circumstances. You've heard me say, if you've been a member of this church for years, we made it a policy that I would never go visit a woman. Even if she's called me and said, I want to be baptized. Well, I'll bring brother so-and-so. No, I just want you to come. Well, I'm not coming. Brother Ayan Dowry. I had some young men meet with him and he was here. Give him some advice about preaching. That's one of the things he told him. He's over in Nigeria. Same thing. People get in trouble with that. Here's another. Go to Proverbs chapter 4, verse 25. You remember we read back up in verse 14, 15. Don't go that way. Verse 25. Let your eyes look directly ahead. Fix your gaze. Let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. What you do with your eyes often leads you where your feet end up walking. In Job chapter 31, remember Job predates Abraham. And here's what Job said as he talked about his moral integrity. Verse 1, 31:1. He said, I've made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? Evidently, Job believed in monogamy. What's wrong with gazing at a virgin? You know, if you can have more than one woman, what's wrong with that? She's a virgin. No, he's got a wife. He's not going to be looking to satisfy lust. Jesus warned about that in Matthew 5. Whoever looks upon a woman to lust after her. And there's millions of dollars being made and many marriages being ruined and lives being overturned through this very avenue called pornography. You use your computer, don't you? People use that phone. Oh, I'm going to this site. Oh, there's a little picture over here. Here, click on it. Look at the way that woman's dressed or that man. Tempting. It used to be, you know, the magazines at the checkout stands that were back. No, it doesn't have to be that anymore. Pornography. Avoid lust for other men and women. Avoid those things that lead to that, that suggest it. Just skip that. Don't touch it. Don't walk that way. Then, here's this third one I've got. Look at Proverbs 12:26. The righteous is a guide to the neighbor, but the way of the wicked leads them astray. What are we talking about avoiding here? We're talking about companions that lead astray. You've got the wrong friends that can lead you astray. Over in chapter 13, in verse 20, he said, he who walks with wise men will be wise. The companion of fools will suffer harm. Look, find friends that don't do the kind of things that's going to corrupt, destroy. People get married and they've got friends they used to have in the world or before they got married. Maybe you just need to do away with those friends. But I went to school with them. Yeah, well, maybe. But they may not be the people you need to get together with, play games with, or whatever. Right in this connection, look at 2 Samuel chapter 13. 2 Samuel chapter 13. Verse 3. Here's a guy named Amnon. He's lovesick. Verse 2. He's lovesick for a beautiful woman named Tamar. And so, verse 3, he had a friend. See that little word friend? I put italics around mine. Not everybody that says a friend really a friend. He had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimei, David's brother. Jonathan was a very shrewd man. He said, why are you so depressed morning after morning? Will you not tell me? And he told him why. So Amnon concocted a plan. Sounded like a pretty good plan. And so Amnon tried it. And he raped that innocent woman. Shamed her, shamed him. Eventually, her brother killed him. Counsel. I'll go talk to somebody. Who are you going to talk to? People go to counselors. Boy, there may be some good ones, but you better be careful. The counselors don't hold the morals you have. They don't know about this plan. Many of them don't believe in a long-lasting covenant. But be careful who you get the counselors. All right. Remember when Jesus concluded the Sermon on the Mount? You know this statement. He said, whoever hears these words of mine and acts upon them is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The winds came, the rain fell, it stood. You get married, there are going to be some storms. Would you stand? Build your marriage on the rock of God's holy word. That's what will make it stand. I'm going to conclude with these verses from Psalm. Psalm 119. Luke, beginning in verse 97. Oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day. Your commandments make me wiser than my enemies, for they're ever mine. I have more insight than all my teachers, for your testimonies are my meditation. I understand more than the aged, because I've observed your precepts. Verse 105, he said, your lamp is a light to my feet and a light to my path. You want some counselors? They're in verse 24. Your testimonies are my delight. They are my counselors.